Welcome to the Intersection Podcast, where we host conversations with pastors, scholars, and ministry leaders on topics at the intersection of gospel and culture. This podcast is sponsored by the Telos Collective, a missional initiative founded by Bishop Todd Hunter. Learn more about us at teloscollective.com.
Greetings, friends. Welcome to the Intersection Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Willits. And this week we're doing something a little different. You might have noticed from the title, this is a bonus episode. This conversation with John Ziegler was the beginning of a conversation we had that will drop as a full podcast episode later this week. But our conversation kind of went on, and instead of slicing and dicing, I decided to extract this little intro where John tells his story, tells how he came to faith, tells how he moved from the Assembly of God, this charismatic tradition, into the Anglican tradition. I thought it was a really beautiful telling of somebody's journey. And instead of slicing and dicing it, I thought I would just give it to you as a bonus episode so that you can get to know John a little bit before the episode that we drop later this week, where we interview him about the Holy Spirit and how he has experienced the Spirit as he's moved into this Anglican tradition he finds himself in now. So no frills, no nothing like that, just a little bonus episode for you today. So enjoy. Well, I'd love to hear you share your story. You know, we're talking this whole season about the Holy Spirit. So our theme, life in the Spirit, cultivating an empowered witness. We're diving into all things Holy Spirit. So I'd love for you to maybe track your story a little bit and, you know, help us hear about how you have processed not only your journey, but how the Spirit has kind of woven in through that. Coming from a tradition that's a little more on the charismatic side to now being an Anglican and in between being at Fuller, which is kind of a different space than both of those. Man, just give us the story. Give us a little of that Canterbury journey that you've taken.
Cool. Yeah. So I'm the son of a Pentecostal preacher man. So my dad's an Assemblies of God pastor. So I grew up in that house, in that tradition. And, the Assemblies of God, we call it AG, so I might use the term a lot here. I'm going to shorten it, make the podcast shorter.
Sounds good.
The AG is a very, diverse group of churches as well. So, the same thing like Anglican, right? There's such a difference between different Anglican parishes and, across the globe. So anyway, I'd say my dad is more of a classical Pentecostal, more traditional AG. So I grew up in that kind of setting. Really, as a teenager, started to take my faith seriously, kind of gave my life to Christ as a young teenager and, really committed, took my faith serious at that point and really tried to live for God in new ways that I hadn't before. I would say, earlier on, I definitely wasn't living for God and really it was a hard kind of PK come to Jesus kind of thing, Like I hope my kids have at some point, or never have to have.
Or never have. All right.
Point, should I say? When I graduated high school and went to college, I wanted to continue living my faith out, was really trying to live for God as a college student. So I joined a group called Chi Alpha, which is the Assemblies of God outreach on college campuses. So just like you've got InterVarsity or
right.
The Baptists have their Baptist Student Union or whatever, the Assemblies of God has this thing, Chi Alpha. And, I was at University of Louisiana Lafayette with one of the most popular Chi Alpha guys in the whole nation, a guy named Eric Truel, who's just a really, phenomenal leader. And so it was a really great experience for me. And, it was in Chi Alpha that I had a big shift in my spirituality in that, Chi Alpha, probably like most or the best of campus ministries, emphasized discipleship, kind of one-on-one discipleship, kind of pouring your faith into others to kind of help them grow.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of this interpersonal emphasis that I think just like a lot of probably charismatic church, even evangelical churches lack. in a sense of, you know, a lot of times the gospel is disseminated over the loudspeaker, right? So you right. receive instruction in a large group meeting, but less kind of people kind of getting into your life and helping you grow. Well, you know, college ministry is often all about that, right? You're living yeah. in a dorm, you're leading a small group, you got these like 10 guys that you're trying to pour into, you know, you're meeting with them in the cafeteria during the week, and you're kind of, you know, reading the Bible with them and stuff. And really the university provides this kind of communal setting that's really good for that kind of thing, right?
Absolutely.
So anyway, so that was a huge impact. You know, suddenly I had pastors that were meeting with me one-on-one and encouraging me and challenging me. And, you know, suddenly they're training me to do this for other people. They're training me to be a small group leader. So they had this curriculum called Discipleship by Design. And in it, you're reading this book. I don't know if you know this book. It's called The Master Plan of Discipleship by Robert E. Coleman. You know this guy? I think he's a Methodist guy.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Asbury. And, you know, he's kind of going through Jesus's method of discipleship, or at least his version of it, you know, and saying, hey, this is how Jesus did it. This is how you should be doing it. And part of his thing is that, like, Jesus had the masses coming and showing up, right? But he focused so much of his time concentrated not on the masses, but on, like, training these 12 guys in, like, how to live. And so his thing is, like, yeah, we need the, you know, these large group gatherings and, you know, Billy Graham style evangelism to the stadiums is great. But the thing that really changes the world is just, you know, investing in. So, you know, that began to really shape my thinking. And, you know, the idea there was that discipleship isn't something that's just taught, but it's something that's caught.
Yeah.
Well, that can be kind of earth shattering if you think about, you know, the emphasis in preaching that Pentecostals have, and also the emphasis on kind of like God's ability to zap you, right?
It's right,
like
the
classic, even here. I mean, we've got Pentecostal churches in our neighborhood and I love them and they're great, you know, but it seems like the testimony is like, I was in a gang, I was on drugs, and then I went to this church, you know, the preacher gave an altar call and then they prayed for me, like God zapped me, right? Yep. Like right away I quit smoking, and then all of a sudden, like everything's changed, right? And of course, I still believe that God does that and that God can kind of zap you and change you. But something that Kaiapha was emphasizing, that even if God did zap you, you still probably have a lot to grow. You really could benefit from someone investing in you. Well, you can kind of follow that chain. If you just keep thinking about that long enough, you got to think, okay, well, somebody's pouring into me, some AG guy's pouring into me. Who poured into that guy? And then who poured into that guy? And on down the line, you're going to get back to some Protestant person like Martin Luther, right? Well, right. Who discipled Martin Luther? Well, okay, that was a Roman Catholic person, right? Sooner or later, if it's not only taught, but it's caught, you got to ask, who'd you catch it from? And so that just goes up to a chain of people that were catching it from people for hundreds of years that didn't look Pentecostal, that didn't look evangelical, at least the American version of it that I had been raised in.
Yeah.
And so it really brings you back to a more rooted sense of the faith. So that was a big kind of milestone in my development. Also, while I was an undergrad, I met some folks from the Newman Center, which is the Roman Catholic campus ministry on campus. And, you know, I was super surprised to find out that some of them loved Jesus more than I did. You know, that some of them were going on missions trips. And
did you, learn this as you were trying to convert them? Did you learn?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. As I'm trying to get them to come to my campus like going the real version of Christianity.
Yeah.
I was like shocked to find out that some of them really loved Jesus. Now, you know, I still thought they had the story wrong and I thought they had the sacraments wrong and they were doing baptism all wrong and stuff. But I was learning to appreciate parts of what they were doing. And every now and then I would go to some kind of meeting with them or something, you know, just to experience it. And I never, ever pictured myself being in something more liturgical or anything like that. It didn't win me over, you know, when yeah. but there were parts of it that I could appreciate, like the way that they would pray together. I was like, yeah, I could see some value in this. And I would go and pray in that chapel in the mornings. And, you know, sometimes the things that were written on the wall would speak to me, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I am the way, the truth, and the life, written in Latin above the chapel. You know, there's something about that just really resonated in my soul and connected. So anyway, all to say is after campus ministry, after undergrad, I felt a call to full-time ministry for a long time. And also a call to missions. And I had a friend that had gone on to become the campus pastor of another Chi Alpha group in Berlin, Germany. And so I kind of signed up to give a year of my life to serve with that missionary in Berlin, Germany. And so that's what I did. And I ended up being in Berlin for 3 years, kind of as support staff for this campus ministry. And we were helping to oversee campus ministry for East Germans, you know, like all these student-led groups throughout East Germany. And what happened at some point, some Pentecostal person had come through and started like a campus ministry there and then moved on, you know, and just it was student-led. But what happens is these pious Lutheran students come down from the mountains in Saxony to go to the university and they're looking for a campus group, right? And so, oh, Students for Christ, that sounds like something I want to be a part of. They join and they're happy. And then after, you know, a semester or two, they're the ones leading the group. And so, you know, we thought of these groups in, you know, hopefully none of the AG people are listening. I don't want to get anybody in trouble, but we were writing home saying, hey, we got these campus ministry groups across Eastern Europe. But the truth is they were led by Lutheran students. Well, when a Lutheran student prays, are they going to pray like a Lutheran or are they going to pray like a Pentecostal, right? If they're going to do a Bible study, is it going to be a Lutheran Bible study? Is it going to be a, you know?
All right.
So we were, in a sense, overseeing these mostly Lutheran student groups, you know? They had a little, you know, Pentecostal influence. But anyway, all to say is there was some reverse evangelism happening there. And so, you know, we're having a conference and these kids are like, can we just have a little more space for like contemplation and silence? And I'm like, why do we need silence? Yeah, you know, we have an electric guitar. We're in our 20s, you know, let's want to be loud, you know, because that's how I grew up with it. And so anyway, they were slowly, and I'm very hard headed. So just so you know, on the uptake, I'm very slow to change my mind about anything. So I fought people on the other side of all these things for a long time. So, but little by little, you know, kind of their spirituality was starting to seep into my own piety. And then, you know, when you're in a place like Europe, you're confronted with the history of the church. You know, in America,
right. The
Roman Catholic Church or the Lutheran Church might be the same age as the Pentecostal Church on the corner, right, or the Baptist Church. But if you're in a place like Europe, you're walking into churches, you know, that were built in the 1300s. And you just have to somehow, if you think you're a better Christian than them, somehow you have to square with these people have been confessing in the name of Christ, been repenting of their sins and confessing Jesus as Lord for, you know, the last 700 years in this building, long before, you know, Pentecostals like to think of how great they are. And, you know,
right.
But really we've been rocking since like, you know, Charles Parham and William Seymour, you know, that's talking like the 1906 or something, right? Yep. That's not that long ago. So you got to realize that something was happening. The Spirit of God is at work here long before we came on the scene. So you're confronted with that history of the church. You walk into the Cathedral of Berlin on Easter because you're visiting and you want to check it out. And the Holy Spirit is speaking to you through the art on the wall before the service starts, right? The Holy Spirit is literally painted in a dove at the top of the dome of the ceiling. And you see the relief of Stephen being stoned in the book of Acts up there. And you know, God's already working through that artwork before the first song is ever sung, the first word is ever preached, you know, and then of course you go down and receive communion in ways you're not used to receiving it, right? and wine, which we never had wine in the Pentecostal church in America. But you know, you go and receive communion in a very sacred, very, you know, way that's just powerful. And so anyway, there were experiences there that really began to open my mind up to seeing the church as a much bigger tent. And seeing the work of the Spirit as much bigger than the little small expression I had been exposed to growing up. And then I started studying theological education there in preparation for Assemblies of God ordination and also campus ministry training. And so in the theological work I was doing, we read Alistair McGrath's Christian Theology, that textbook he's got, the systematic theology. Happens to be Anglican, doesn't really talk much about Anglican in the thing. But he's got a very wonderful approach of pulling in like a very historical view. Like here are these important figures in church history. Like here's your church fathers that are important. Here's your reformers that are important. Here's some contemporary voices, you know, that are important. And, you know, reading that and taking some theology classes while there really began to open me up. And I think a lot of us Pentecostals, we have kind of a spiritual pride, you know, like we've got it right. We've got the book of Acts, right? We've got the Holy Spirit, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, which is fine, you know, but I, like, you know, the more you begin to think about someone like a John Wesley, you know, you just begin to think about him who was never Pentecostal, never baptized as an adult. You just begin to realize like, I'm probably never going to be as filled with the Spirit as John Wesley. I would love to be, but I'm probably never going to be as an impactful preacher and revivalist as John Wesley. And you just begin to realize without, you know, without him having whatever, some of the distinctives that we would thought were so great in the AG, this guy, John Wesley, is, you know, or I can think of someone else, Augustine, you know, saying, you know, baptized as an adult, but definitely he was baptizing babies, definitely had a different view of the Eucharist, definitely had a different view of the church, but just full of the Spirit and talking about the Bible and talking about the faith in ways that just really transforms life and transforms the life of the church. So I would say that when I came back in 2008 from Europe, I was no longer a Protestant in the sense that I was no longer protesting the church in the ways that I was protesting before I left. Yeah. And I had a much more humble view. I was still would have firmly seen myself in a lot of ways, AG, but had a much more humble view towards others, a posture for learning. And then, you know, one of my mentors turned me on to N.T. Wright, read Surprised by Hope. And, you know, Pentecostals, a lot of us have unfortunately, dispensationalist eschatology, you know, this whole rapture thing and, you know, the world can end very badly. And I would say our eschatology didn't, and we can get into this later, didn't fit well with our pneumatology, our understanding of sanctification. It was like we were using this dispensationalist, cessationalist eschatology taped on to our experience of the Spirit. It's just bad. Like, it don't fit together well. Right. If anybody's having trouble trying to figure that out, you know, email me or something. I'll be glad to help figure that out. But all I have to say is, you know, N.T. Wright really helped to undo some things and helped me just understand the resurrection as the basic hope, not only that Jesus was raised from the dead, but my resurrection is the thing that I need to be looking forward to.
Yeah.
And, you know, helping me to see my faith in light of that. Better understanding. So anyway, that was huge. So I'd say by the time I got to Fuller in 2010, I was already Anglican leaning without having ever met an Anglican in my life.
And
in fact, some of my instincts were starting to become a little more Catholic leaning. You know, my Fuller experience just, I'd say, further cemented me in that direction. What's great about Fuller, I'd say in a lot of ways, kind of like Anglican, Big Ten thought, you're going to think about all these different thinkers, kind of like Alistair McGrath's textbook. They would just lay out, here's some, you know, Eastern Orthodox views, Roman Catholic views, Reformation views, contemporary views. And you know, let's just take the best of this and kind of synthesize it, you know, on whatever point of doctrine we're trying to talk about. And I feel like that's what Anglicans do, you know, is that we are Big Ten and we're looking. Oh, I mean, I feel totally fine as an Anglican, you know, trying to read what some Vineyard guy said about something and trying to figure out what, you know, St. Bernard of Clairvaux said about the same thing. And I don't have to have any special pleading for why I'm using these two guys in my presentation.
Yeah.
We just readily can, you know, see their testimony. And so I'd say that kind of approach to theology at Fuller, although Fuller is not a very Anglican-minded place, isn't really talking about that. In a lot of ways, approaches theology in a very Big Tent Anglican kind of way.
Yeah, it's got to be Anglican friendly because I know lots of folks in the Anglican church that are Fuller grads. So there's something in the water there.
Yeah, right. So, you know, and, you know, I would just say a lot of my friends had a very high appreciation for liturgical traditions, for the, you know, both Eastern Orthodoxy and Roman Catholicism.
Yeah.
And I shared that with them. And I would often find myself agreeing, if there were several views laid out, almost often found myself resonating more with the Roman Catholic views or Eastern Orthodox views. You know, this might be cut in a later conversation, but the reformers, some of them seem to be cessationists in that they thought the gifts of the Spirit dropped out, you know, at some point, you know, mm-hmm. in the church, maybe after the apostles or something. And so it seems that at least some of the Reformation traditions kind of didn't believe that the Spirit was really showing up and doing stuff or working miracles. They're just more skeptical, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But it seems like the Eastern Orthodox and the Roman Catholics have maintained that God has always showed up, yeah. miracles are still happening, the Holy Spirit hasn't left the building.
Yeah.
And so as a Pentecostal, it was way easier to resonate with them because I was like, well, yeah, I'm really more on board with their ways of thinking. I think also in terms of free will, you know, Pentecostals tend to lean more towards free will.
Yep.
In the same way that Eastern Orthodox and Roman Catholic would lean towards free will, right? And a little, some of our Reformation brothers and sisters can be a little more deterministic. And of course, we have that determinism strain within the ACNA, within yep. the Anglicanism, which is great. And so basically, I would say by the end of Fuller, you know, I wanted to be at a church where my Methodist professors and my Presbyterian professors would both be welcome, right? Do we really need a separate church, right? For Joel Greed and Marianne Meyer Thompson, right? My Methodist New Testament people and my Presbyterian. No, it's like you should be able to be Calvinist and be Arminian and still be in the same church. Like,
absolutely.
We don't need separate communions for that, right? Like, we can all receive the Eucharist together. And I began to realize that, oh, there is a church that does that. It's called the Anglican Church, where, you know, it's a church of Wesley and Whitfield. You can still be in the same church together and have some meaningful disagreement. So I think that was a big part of, you know, wanting that was big. But really, I set out to plant a church and was going to do it within the Assemblies of God, even though my theology and convictions have become more and more Anglican. I just thought, hey, these people are the people that taught me about Jesus. And they're the only people I've ever known. Same, you know, my wife, Jenna, also co-priest, co-planter. AG was our only thing we had ever done, you know? And so we were really not trying to, like, leave our family. I mean, that wasn't a thing for us. But as we set out in the church planning journey in the early stages, I think we just realized, like, wait up. I can't do this. Like, kind of the type of I'm going to make. They're going to need church history, and they're going to need to understand that the saints are important. And they're really going to need to think in a much more rooted way. And the AG just didn't have the resources for that. And, you know, I was lying on my papers. I was an AG minister. You know, you have to, like, renew your credentials every year. And there were a few points, like their eschatology, that were just obviously wrong. And there's a ton of AG pastors that just lie on that every year because they're just, like, trying to be a part of this thing, you know? And it's in good conscience that they lie, you know? And it's, you know, they're trying to love their church in the right direction. We were trying to do that, too. I just realized that God wasn't calling me to reform this church. Like, it wasn't the thing I was called to. And I'm not super diplomatic. Like, some people are very, like, they're less black and white and they're, like, more diplomatic and they could just live in tension. I'm like, I can't live in the tension. It's No, we got to get some things right. You know, like, hope is the resurrection. The rapture is a joke. It's not ever going to happen the way you think it's going to happen. So I had to move past it. So anyway, I met someone at a conference and they knew of Todd Hunter and, you know, somehow they introduced us to a meeting with Todd. So basically, you know, we drove down the coast of Mesa and had a meeting with Todd and the rest is kind of history. You know, we got plugged in at St. David's, which is out of North Hollywood in Burbank, an older Episcopal church that had come into the ACNA, and Father Jose there became a mentor for us. And, you know, we joined that parish as we prepared to plant a church. So anyway, that's a very long story. Maybe took up all of our time there. But, you know, that's kind of my journey into it.
All right, friends. Thanks for listening to the Intersection Podcast today. I hope you enjoyed this bonus episode and enjoyed getting to know John Ziegler a little bit. Be on the lookout for the full episode that we do with John, where we interview him and we have a great conversation about his experience with the Holy Spirit and how that has developed in his life and in his thinking and his theology and his churchmanship and just kind of overall great conversation about the Holy Spirit. So be looking for that later this week. And until then, check us out at teloscollective.com. Make sure to sign up for our newsletter. And as always, leave us a review on iTunes, share us with a friend, because our goal is to get as many people as we can in on this conversation of how we faithfully live at the intersection of gospel and culture. So until later this week, peace.
Thank you for listening to the Intersection Podcast, where we help leaders pursue formation at the intersection of gospel and culture. We invite you to get to know us at our website, tellusscollective.com.